everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. This is episode 89 of the Geeksters Show, and we're glad to see you here. We are, if you're listening to us live, we apologize. We are a day late. Work got in the way yesterday, and that darn work and that darn paycheck. Nah, it's all right. It's all good. I didn't get home till very late, so I thank my co-hosts here helping me out that they were very nice and allowed me to move it to today because I really wanted to be here, but yesterday I didn't even get home till 7:15 or so my time. So it was a full day, absolutely a full day. But speaking of my co-hosts, I want to introduce Mitch Heyman. Mitch, how's it going?
Not too bad.
You notice I paused on your last name there just to make sure I had it.
That's all right. I say names wrong too a lot of times.
And we got Tim Bauermeister. Tim, how's it going?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing real good. It's good. A nice, beautiful fall day here up in the Pacific Northwest. Can't get any better than that.
It's been fantastic here too. I mean, it's just been wonderful, the weather and watching the leaves turn. You know, the whole thing with missing a day, having to push this thing back, I guess that would be an issue. Might be something we'd have to apologize for if we were paid to come to. This is what we do on the side. You know, we are real techs and we do this for a real living, and sometimes real life gets in the way of what we do here. I wish everything I did in my life was as professional as what I do, you know, at work, but work has to be first. So hey, you know, work calls. What do you do, Martin? You gonna just tell them, just blow them off?
You know. Well, and it was weird because everywhere I went yesterday, it was a network downtime. I've never had a place where I'd be from, you know, from point A to point B fixing another network and, you know, C calls and says, hey, our network's down also. Like, was it a full moon? Are there solar flares hitting? You know, and a couple of them were, you know, new router installs. One was just walk up, reboot this router. The other one was, you know, Verizon had them reboot the router, which then threw it all up in the air. And then I guess one of my clients got an email today from their ISP saying, hey, we're done making the changes. I hope you didn't have too much disruption and let us know if you have any questions. and so I get an email back saying, or from them that's on site saying, you know, it'd be nice if they would have let us know, because that's one of the worst things to do is to be troubleshooting something on site when somebody else is making a whole lot of changes and they don't notify you that they're making changes. You end up chasing your tail.
Right.
And thinking you broke something.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, that's like the first law of troubleshooting. Change one thing. Review how that has affected it. Has that made it better? Has it made it worse? Or no change? Okay. And then you go back and you either change it back or you make the next change. I'm constantly amazed by people who will make a lot of changes and then try and scratch their head as to which one fixed it, which one made it worse, or don't know that maybe one of them fixed it, but it's not fixed now because one of the other changes broke it. And so, yeah, the whole thing of troubleshooting, you have to be very, very methodical and take one step at a time. And when somebody else, like you're saying, is doing things at the other end, especially if you're not even aware of it, you know, that's a recipe for disaster there.
Yeah. No, I've definitely dealt with people where they change out, you know, the router and all the switches at the same time, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and actually, I guess that I'm kind of referring. If I sound a little irritated, I'm kind of thinking back to the most recent time this happened, where I was actually working with somebody else, and they, in their mind, the problem that was existing now was my fault because of something that I had done previously. However, the problem existed from long ago. The problem still existed unchanged, and so what I had done had could not have had any effect on it. But they were looking for some reason to blame me somehow. And so this is a person that I have witnessed through the years that just not understand the basics of troubleshooting. And so it was really pointless for me to try and explain to them that they were wrong, because they just never had a good grasp on it. But troubleshooting is something that if you're not doing it alone, you got to have good communication with everybody else involved.
Right, definitely. Yeah. So, other than that, it's been busy, but it's been good. Today was a good full day. Still got some stuff to do tonight, but it's stuff that I can do with sitting in front of a TV or whatnot. So,
cool. You should watch Pi.
I think I may not watch Pi. The problem is, if I'm going to sit down in front of the TV and work, I got to put on something really, really dumb. Really, something really easy, like, I don't know. Usually it's something the kids are watching, which equals something dumb and easy.
Yeah.
Either
you guys, Breaking Bad fans, did you watch the show? Did you follow it?
I've been hearing so much about it. I've never watched it.
Okay. Well, both of you are shaking your heads. I'll tell you, it was start to finish. The show was fantastic.
I did try.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. And I'll tell you what, that's okay, because the show was very, very intense. I mean, it was start to finish. It was extremely intense, and you didn't know what was going to happen show to show. Looking back from season 2, season 3, I remember thinking, I don't see how they could possibly carry this any further. It was just so intense. And I give it, I give it to Vince Gilligan, because he actually maintained it. He maintained very high standards. I thought the show was it was very even and excellent the whole way through. But it was extremely intense. But I want to throw this out. I heard the funniest thing was that, Bryan Cranston played the Walter White, the main character in the show. And there's been so much discussion since the fight wrapped up and it ended, where does it go from here? Because everybody wants a movie. Everybody wants this, that, and, just don't want to let go yet. And so, but there was somebody, I read this on the G+ feed or something, but somebody suggested that Breaking Bad was at the end of Breaking Bad, that what happens from here is that that Walter White goes into witness protection somehow. Did you see that? You should get,
I think I mentioned it once before. I don't know if I mentioned it to you or not, okay. But yeah, okay. I saw it also.
Oh, I hope I'm not thinking back to like the last show or something. I thought I read this in G+, but that Walter White actually, he went into witness protection, he got a new name, a new family, like in the suburbs, and that Breaking Bad is actually a prequel to Malcolm in the Middle, which I thought was absolutely that's genius. I thought that was so clever, and so
it is.
You know what?
Really,
I like it, kind of wraps it up, because everybody wants something more, and it's like if you give them that, it's like, wow, you know what? That's something more. It doesn't have to end. We can just go back, and obviously it's insane. That's crazy, but I thought it was really clever that somebody came up with that, because Malcolm in the Middle, that's kind of what you would want from your informants, from your people with the new identities. You want them just to blend in, and you would want just that perfect little suburban thing, as opposed to what you see in all the movies where they get a new identity and it just goes bad. They try it for
real bad.
They try it for a week. I can't do the barbecue thing. I'm back in the business. We're getting the old gang together.
Right. Right. Yeah, and actually, I tried Breaking Bad for about 6 episodes, maybe 5 episodes. No, 4 episodes. I'm slowly going down. And I just couldn't get into it. Now, everybody I've talked to has said you just got to chug along the first, season, and then you're hooked. After that, it's all downhill from there.
So what you watched was the first season. You weren't like starting in the middle somewhere or?
No, I started from the beginning, and I got about 4 episodes in, and I just was like, I can't get into it. It's not hooking me.
Okay.
I can see that. Everybody says trudge through and you'll get it. So
yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mitch, anything exciting with you going on?
No, just still reading up on Arch Linux, and I found a new install guide. I want to follow that one. I might do that. It's a little less than the one I followed, but because they're always, Linux, they're always updating stuff and things change all the time. So this guy just came up with this video series, which was about a week ago, and it's Jay the Linux guy on YouTube. So if anybody's, I mean, it's just not Arch. He does a lot of other Linux stuff. So if you want to follow him, and he explains things really well, you might want to give him a shot. Jay, the Linux guy.
Yeah, I noticed that. I saw your post on that, and I'll have to take a look at that. I know. Speaking of new operating systems, I booted up for a client. It's a Windows 8 machine. I've worked on a Windows 8 machine. I've never had one in my house, and there it is. I mean, it's doing Windows updates right now. I did ran through Nynite and put the Classic Shell on there.
Sure.
That boots right to the desktop. So liking that it's free. Was hoping to go with the Windows Starter. Sounds like they've pulled that after talking with Mitch and doing some research on that. So I'll probably just put LibreOffice on it. It's an older gentleman. Everything is web-based. He just wants to be able to, you know, go online, get his favorites, do his banking, talk to his kids. That's pretty much it. And his computer was dying. So if he got a computer. He got a sub-$400 Windows 8 computer. And I thought, well, we'll modify it to look like Windows 7 and go from there. So yeah. So that's new in my house. And I'll probably get it deployed maybe tomorrow, depending on how things go tonight. But I know it's my first one. So I haven't really wanted to do much with it. I'm definitely not deploying in the enterprise. And since I do a lot of enterprise and not necessarily one-offs, it was time to go ahead and get one and take a look. I've tried to run one in a VM, and it doesn't really work very well. So, yeah. So far, so good. But then again, I've only had it on for 45 minutes. So it's lasting 45 minutes. we'll see what the rest of the night holds. But I wanted to continue on this today because it's still October, which is, National Cybersecurity Month. We talked about that last time. We talked about how to encrypt, we talked about safety and security with your iPhones. One of the things that I know I do, and I know a lot of people do, is we talk a lot about two-factor authentication. And what exactly is two-factor authentication? There's three types of authentication, okay? And one is something you know, which is usually a password, a passphrase, a passcode, a PIN number, okay? Something you have, and that's usually a cryptographic chip, a token, an RSID-style token. My wife has one of those for work. You see them on keychains a lot. They're rotating things. Google Authenticator, on your smartphones will do that. And then something, the third process would be something you are. So that's where you get into your fingerprints, your voice patterns, your iris patterns, something like that. Is that headache getting you to you, Tim?
It's something that you know, something you have, and something you are. Is that what it is? Is that what you
right,
just
those
said?
Are the,
okay, I like that.
Right.
I like that summary there.
So those are three factors, recognized factors, okay? So two-factor authentication has to, of course, incorporate two of those, okay? So a lot of times, a majority of the time, with the Google Authenticator that's coming out now, and I use it all the time. So I have something I know, which is my password, and I have something I have, which is my Google Authenticator. That's what two-factor authentication is. It's two of those three things. And with that, you can, if I hold up my phone here and I turn on my Google Authenticator, now the people in the live on the audio won't see this, but the people on the live show can see that this is my Google Authenticator. And at every 60 seconds, I get a new one. And this is for my my LastPass. And so I can show that, not worrying about somebody snagging that, because you have to have this with my password to be able to access my LastPass. See, and it just changed. So again, I can show it. And I know that in 60 seconds, that's going to change again. And that's that. So so because I'm able to show that, along with something I know, my password, I have to have both those things for me to log into my LastPass passwords. And then from there, that's where I store my passwords, my clients' passwords, and I use LastPass because they're well versed. And there's a KeePass and there's other things like that. And there's a lot of sites now that are using two-factor authentication. Google is using two-factor authentication. I think Facebook is using two-factor authentication. Let me pull up these sites really quick. I bookmarked them, and I apologize for not having them
I find that the Google one, you know, to log on to Google, where they'll send me something in my send me a text message, and I have to put that in.
Right, right. A lot of times your bank will do that, where they will you can set up where you will log in your bank, and they will authenticate you via a text message, right? Yeah, Google, Facebook, Twitter does it. Then you can set up two-factor authentication within WordPress. You can set up two-factor authentication within Drupal. So I just wanted to bring that out as we're talking about, you know, this being Cybersecurity Month, that two-factor authentication, if you don't already use it, it's free. A lot of times, you know, the Google one is free. The RSA ones, you do have to probably purchase the tokens and stuff. But I've been using it for a long time and I really encourage everybody to use it. And there will be show, of course, anything we mention here, there will be show notes for users. But that's cool. Now, you said you use it just for your Google, Mitch?
Yeah, I just finally did it because they, you know, every now and then they would bug me, you know, when I went to sign on. And I said, all right, I'm going to do it. So I did it.
Yeah. And now it's gotten, you know, so simple, especially with Google, because what they do is on your to do two-factor authentication on your smartphones, Google will actually, because they won't give you a long string of numbers, they'll actually put up on your screen a QR code that you just take a picture with your phone. So, yeah, it makes it really simple. So I encourage anybody out there who is questioning whether or not to use two-factor authentication, go ahead and use it. It's really simple. It's not very hard to set up. And in the long run, it's going to be, you know, it's going to save you.
Very good. I agree.
I came across another site. Now, this site, what?
I agree. You're absolutely right. I agree, and I have nothing to add to it.
Okay.
And I put a period on it.
Period. Okay. I came across a site that I thought this was really funny. Well, you guys know that every day, all the time, there's always cyber attacks going on somewhere, someplace. Oh, yeah. Right. Well, and then have you guys heard of what, you guys know what honeypots are?
Well, you mean like in a, like on the internet kind of thingy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's the honeypot, you know, the pooper. Portable toilets you see.
You went that way with it.
All right. All yeah. Right. So there's
honey dippers, the you're thinking of.
There's honeypot, whatever. Anyways.
Well, the honey dippers are dipping out of something. The honeypot.
Yes, so?
I was thinking of Pooh Bear. I like the Pooh Bear. I like that visual. I like that visual. I prefer that visual.
All right, we'll stick with that one. So not the Pooh Bear honeypot, but honeypots are usually computers placed on the internet in different places that are unpatched. And what they're put on the internet for is they're basically just, they're just there to see what's attacking. And so people can use these to measure threat levels, essentially. So if you see a rise in a certain virus, because all these viruses are hitting the honeypots, then you can go by that to
gauge the threat level.
Thank you. So I came across a site called HoneyCloud. So it's map.honeycloud.net, and it's a map of the world. And if you go there, it's pretty cool. So map.honeycloud.net, and I'll throw it in the chat here. And what you can do is you can actually watch in live what's going on, as throughout the world, and it's hitting, you know, who's hitting what. I apologize for that. So, you know, it goes on to talk about that. And right now, you know, there's a couple going on in Chicago and Iceland, and you know, you can kind of just watch this thing, and eventually it kind of reminds me of global thermonuclear war from
War Games.
From War Games.
Yes.
Kind of has that feeling where every now and then a blue dot will pop up, or every now and then a red dot will pop up, and it seems to be pretty.
You know what this looks like? It looks like right Ingress. It looks like the Ingress. It looks like the Intel.
I knew that was coming.
Hey Mark, what do I have to do? I load it up, but the map just stays. Okay, here we go. Now it's just starting to load. All right.
Yeah, you got to give it some time.
Yeah. I did have to wait a while. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, I'm reading from a Locker Gnome, Chris Perlow site. It says, basically, this map should shed some light on exactly how prevalent cyber attacks really are. They come from all corners of the globe and happen around the clock. Taking preventative measures to protect your system from harm is not only good defense, but it may be essential in keeping your information private and your computer from being put to work for someone with less wholesome intentions. So, you know, how do we prevent these things? Things like, you know, we've talked about this before, a firewall, making sure that you're allowing only the traffic that you're allowing, that's supposed to be allowed in, antivirus and anti-spamware, because once you get infected, a lot of times they will put out requested traffic, and that traffic comes back in through your firewall because it's been requested. Make sure you have good antivirus. Both there's free and purchased antivirus that's just as good. Common sense. Don't be clicking on sites that, you know, punch the monkey. If you don't pass on an email, Microsoft will not, you know, kill 1,000 people. You just common sense. So I wanted to throw that out there. I thought that was a pretty good, kind of a fun map to be able to look and see what's going on.
Yeah, this, I don't know. I'm going to have to wait a little while because this looks like it's going to be really cool. I'm waiting to see if that's the case, but this doesn't actually, there are a number of honeypots in the honeypot project. Honeynet project. This is only, and it says it's only showing, it's only updating those points of those who voluntarily publish that data. So it's right. Not like it's not a full report. However, I'm sitting here and about every 20, 30 seconds it updates and there is there's a dot of.
I only have one shown on mine.
I've got two. But
yeah,
so, does, I mean that's it, I mean I'm yeah, this isn't the sort of thing you actually would sit and watch like TV, but maybe every half hour I come back and re-examine. But it is cool. And in real time, it says, bam, there was an attack in Montevideo, Uruguay. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And so and seeing the map, this isn't a dynamic thing to sit and watch, but this actually is very neat that there that information's available in something of a real time update. So I'm gonna leave that open, take a look at that.
And
it definitely scratches a geeky itch there. That's pretty neat.
And, you know, you can zoom in and zoom out on the map with your scroll mouse, and you can test your geography, because if you hover over any of those, mm-hmm. the names of the countries come up.
So you get that one that's showing Uruguay, I can't even say it.
So you could test your geography by hovering over a country and saying, oh, yeah, that's Sudan.
It's pronounced Ethiopia. Uruguay. Not Uruguay. That would be
we don't want to talk about that.
No.
In the chat.
That would be incorrect and rude. Sorry, Martin. You had a serious cool. thing going here. It actually is.
No, it's okay.
This is really neat because I dig this thing. Any kind of map thing with stuff updating with interesting information. I want it to go.
Well, this would be cool.
I'm rooting for attacks. I want it to. I know.
It's like.
Go, Melissa Virus, go!
Okay, all right. That's pretty neat. Where'd you find that?
Oh, I have ways.
Oh, okay, all right.
I can't. I'm not allowed to reveal my sources.
Okay, all right. Just put it that way. Sorry, forgot.
You know, like Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So, I'm Martin in the middle. Sorry, I know I caught you just.
Martin in the middle. I was taking a drink.
All right. So, I don't know if you guys heard about D-Link and the routers mm-hmm. issue.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. Oh, so I'll go ahead. Go ahead, Mitch.
No. I mean, all I did was just read about it. So,
okay.
You can elaborate.
Well, so this week? Was it last week? Beginning of this week? Somewhere along the way, recently, people had found that there is a backdoor in some of the D-Link routers that can issue a bypass that can be used to bypass the normal authentication procedure of their web-based user interface.
Wow.
So most of the web-based users have a username and password by default. It's usually admin. Most of the people don't change it, but you're supposed to go in and change it to admin a lot of routers will allow you to actually change the username from admin to something else instead of leaving admin, but a majority of them will allow you to change at least the password, Well, what's happening is there's some HTML text. There's something. There's a code that people can go in. They can look at and they can see what's going on and they can run a certain application. See, I don't remember it all, but I do know that there's a problem.
Yeah.
So, Mitch, do you have any? So what's happening is I can tell you that it says the affected models likely include D-Link's DIR-100, DI-524, the DI-524-UP, the DI-604S, the DI-604-UP, the DI-604+, TM-G5240, and possibly the DIR-15s as well. It also says the BIR-04UR and the BLR-04CW routers made by Planex Communications might also be vulnerable because they also seem to use the same firmware. So D-Link will be putting out a patch by Halloween to fix this problem. So D-Link is aware of it. They are not just going to sit on it like people do. Like, so, you know, take the WPS issue that has happened where WPS, providers just said whatever and they didn't do anything about it. So D-Link is actually going to be active. And so by Halloween, they're going to put out a new patch. And that's what, in 2 weeks? So within the next 2 weeks, expect a new patch. If you have any of those routers, and they will be in the show notes again, make sure maybe go get another one. Maybe unplug it. If you have an extra one, don't use this one.
Update the firmware.
Find something else.
When
it comes out.
We'll see. Update the firmware when it comes out. But I think in the meantime, I would,
Go to Target. There's no workaround other than just not using it.
Right. Go to Fred Meyer's and go buy a new one. What are they, $30 to $50?
Yeah. In which case, who needs the firmware update, right? Because we've already got one in service.
After the firmware comes out, you can definitely put it back in production. Maybe it's a backup one. Maybe you're going to make it a second one. But in the meantime, toss it just shelve it, and then go buy a new one at your local Target, Fred Meyer's, Walmart, whatever.
I think you would order one from Amazon through the, or Newegg, the Podnuts links. Isn't that what you would do? That's what I would do.
Yeah, yep. You're right. Amazon, podnuts.com/Amazon. You are right.
What's,
there is no podnuts.com/Target, podnuts.com/Walmart.
what is the nature of this? Are they saying what it is? Is it some kind of a backdoor, or is this just like an exploit that somebody's discovered? Mm-hmm. Are they saying what this is? By any chance? I'm just curious. I kind of missed all this.
It says it's a backdoor type function built into the firmware of some D-Link routers that can be used to bypass. If your browser user agent is string something, you can access the web interface without any authentication and view and change the device settings. So, okay.
Gotcha.
So, view and change the device settings. So, you could do anything as malicious as, locking somebody out. You could do something as malicious, changing the SSID to, your router stinks by a real one or something like that, yeah. All the way to, now, remember, because you have full capabilities, you can change, say, the DNS. So instead of pointing to your local DNS, you get now pointed to some malicious DNS. Now, what happens with that then is all your traffic goes through somewhere malicious. Mm-hmm. And remember, DNS is that domain name system. So it's where things go to look up. Right?
Yeah.
Google.com equals, 8.8.8.8. That's one of their DNS entries. So if you're looking for Google.com, you're going to get an IP address. Well, if somebody were to be malicious, they could go in there and they could change your DNS to look at their DNS. Now, in their DNS, they create a fake Google site that has code in it, that has a bot in it. So I'm going extreme here. But your D-Link now router that is compromised points to their DNS, which then points to, a malicious site, which then you get your site, your computer gets infected and becomes a bot and now is spreading some virus. So it could be that, or it could be, just something simple as changing the SSID, which is the broadcast name.
Sure.
You smell funny.
It could range from merry pranksterism to, legitimate evil deeds. And the flip side, the DNS thing, the flip side of that is that you intentionally change the DNS to direct to, and all of a sudden, I'm drawing a blank on it, but the It's the web safety site, family safety, kid safety, where you can...
OpenDNS.
Is it OpenDNS? Is that it where you can... Yes.
Yeah, that's
it's OpenDNS. That's exactly what I was trying to think of. So, I mean, that would be the flip side. I mean, you would intentionally do that to bring about safety, whereas... And so the other end of that was where the bad guys change it to do the opposite.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, all of a sudden, you've created a site, you know, you've changed your DNS, you've gone through the sites to protect your family from, you know, what you deem as inappropriate content on the network, on the internet. Now, all of a sudden, your four-year-old sits down to go and get online, and she's got, you know, all of a sudden, there's inappropriate, what you feel is inappropriate content popping up, and for your four-year-old.
Right.
So, yeah. So, like I said, there is a security page on the D-Link website, and I'll throw that in the show notes that talks about it, what to do, a little more about what's going on with the D-Link, and then how to patch it. And so it's coming out. So they're just basically saying the new firmware, you know, such and such that fixes the security vulnerabilities will be available by October 31st. So, and this does that, the site that the security site from D-Link actually lists each site and the revision. So even if you don't, even if you don't have a certain, so maybe you have a DIR 120, but it's not a revision A1, maybe you're on E1. I don't think, it doesn't sound like you're affected if you have an E1. Maybe you're affected if you have an A1. And of course, A would be an earlier model and E would be a newer model. So definitely, if you don't know, check out this website on our show notes and get all of that information from them.
It's a pretty simple fix, if in doubt. If you're not sure, just replace it. Done.
Yeah, firmwares on these routers usually exist of you going into the router.
I'm sorry, I meant the unit itself. If there's any doubt whether yours is affected or not, that's the fix, replace it.
Right, but if you do replace it, make sure you go in, change your username, password, all that kind of stuff. Set up, back up your security features. Don't just plug it back in and go to town. Don't go to town without changing your password. I don't know what that's right. That's, if you take anything away from today's show, do not go to town without changing your password. I'm going to get a bumper sticker.
The show title or somewhere.
That's right. The show title. There you go.
But this is exactly what I was talking about. You know, I intentionally opened web access to the router so that I could work on it remotely and the whole thing.
Well, no, but that's remote access. That's different than web access. Your web access is just you accessing the router, right?
I'm sorry. Say it again. The
web access is you just sitting down and typing in 192.168.0.1, and you get prompted for username and password to log into your router.
Correct.
That's web access.
Right.
The vulnerability means that I can type in 192.168.0.1, and I'm in without getting prompted for your username and password.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, all right.
What you're talking about is remote access.
Okay, so this thing actually, obviously, it needs that component.
Yeah.
However, I guess what I was thinking was that, if you have that component disabled, the web access,
you can't get into your router.
But does this vulnerability still exist if that's closed off ahead of time?
Well, but I'm not sure you can get into your. I'm not sure you can get into a lot of the home routers without web access. That's how you configure them. Right. Whereas some routers have both web and like a terminal access.
Buddy.
Well, you can't disable the web interface if you're working locally, because that's how you need to get into it and make those configurations. What I was talking about last week, I guess it was last week, seems like, I don't know, I think it was last week, that I had enabled remote access to configure the wireless network. Two states away. And so,
right.
You know, and I made a big deal about, hey, you know, this is valuable. If it's something that you need to have all the time, be aware that that's always a vulnerability. If that function does exist, and if you need to use it once, bam, open it up and use it once, close it back up. And so this is, and I was thinking this kind of dovetails into that, and that this is the vulnerability, this remote access to the router. To the router settings,
yes.
Right? I mean,
right. That's a vulnerability, whether this came out or not.
Right. But so what does this do? Does this, I mean, if I'm looking at that router that's two states away, I have that remote access disabled. So is it still at risk?
Right. Because if it, so you have remote access disabled, but you talk to your buddy and you do some kind of, you know, team viewer or whatever like that, and you get on their machine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then on their machine, you type in 192.168.0.1, and now you get to the web interface of their router.
Right.
Right? That's the vulnerability. That right there, that web interface is compromised.
It's not saving the password.
Right. You can get around that without having to put in the username and password.
Is that exactly what's going on?
Right. That's what it is.
So
it's not remote. It's okay. It's internal, which
local,
means
yeah.
I see. Okay, so the vulnerability isn't so much being able to remote in with or without credentials. It's just that you actually have to be locally, but once locally, you can just log straight in.
Right. So say your local coffee shop has one of these, you know. Now you can compromise your local coffee shop for these. You know,
I see.
So while it's a vulnerability, it may not be highly you may not be used a lot in the real world because you may have to be local unless you've turned on remote.
I see.
Then you don't. But a lot of times people will just plug them in and go. And a lot of times maybe they're external facing as well. And so that's the vulnerability. You know, but so take this. So you have one of these routers. I'm now running around down the street. I'm war driving. I see D-Link. Yeah. Oh, I jump in because you haven't encrypted it. You just plugged it in and left. I get on because now I connected to D-Link because you don't have a password on your wireless. And then it's admin. Oh, now I'm in your wireless configuration. I didn't have to think about that. And now I can really mess with it. I mean, that's another vulnerability itself. That's just people putting in, you know, a router and walking away without actually taking the time to configure it for security reasons. So that's another. That's a whole nother.
Yeah, I got you there. But that's the thing. If you set it up with default settings, excuse me. You know, if I get in my car, am I driving out of here tonight? And I'm going to find one of these. It's only a matter of time until I do. I said if. I'm not going.
Right. He's too. So say I'm ingressing.
Air quotes. Say I'm ingressing. No, but the thing is, if somebody set it up with default settings, it's going to make it that much easier to find because I know the.
Well, I mean, if it's default settings, then you don't need a you know, their lack of encryption has made themselves vulnerable. You don't need this. But say you harden everything down. You've got a, you know, you've changed your SSID. You've given yourself a 64-bit encryption key. It's WPS2. It's, you know, you've turned off remote assistance. You've turned off UPnP. You've done everything. But you let me into your house and I get your key. You give me your key and I'm like, great. And then now I tweak with it. I don't need your username and password to get in.
But so, wouldn't you be able to spot that yourself if that would be the case? Let's say I got one of these router D-Links. I'm setting it up, put a password in there, go in there. Well, it's not asking me for my password. You should be able to detect that on your own. Am I right?
Well, I think you need to run a string of stuff. I don't know how to. I mean, I don't think it's as simple as sitting down and do that. There is another website that we can that's on a link from the one that talks about how they've done it. You know, I know Steve Gibson talked about it today on Security Now. I have not listened to it, so I do not know. All I know is that there is a vulnerability. I do not know if that vulnerability is very easy to exploit, or if it's something that's like, you know, because you can have a vulnerability and have it.
I mean, somebody could actually even if you have a encrypted, you know, WPA2, somebody could hack that and then
because it's not the encryption, it's the being. Yeah, exactly. Well, WPA2 is a lot harder to encrypt, but yes, theoretically you can decrypt
We have to get black hammer on the program. I got to say.
Well, and a white vehicle sitting outside your van for a while.
No, it'll take a while. No, I live in a van. You're right.
You do.
I'm down by the river. You can find me.
I'm just living here, officer.
We were all in your van, weren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Mitch, you were in the.
I thought I was going to go through the windshield at one point.
The ladies' room.
I don't remember that.
I had the formal dining room.
Well, you know. Everybody drives that way in a parking garage. Yeah, Mitch. It was all right.
With five by five center poles, whatever, or beam, whatever they are, beams.
Oh my goodness!
I recognize a slalom when I see one.
Live video game.
And it wasn't my van. Right. It was my wife's.
Oh. Well then, party on, Garth.
Party on, Wayne.
All right, on to something a little more fun. I saw this, so that John Neustetter, a good friend of ours from Canada. Go Canada. I don't know. Sorry, John, if you're listening to this, I had no idea what to put in there, so we'll just stick with that. Go Canucks. I saw this on Google Plus, and a lot of times, so we all every now and then are given a computer or we have a keyboard. Bye, Mitch.
See you, buddy.
He hates Canada.
He's still upset about my driving.
That's right. I'm out of here. If you haven't noticed, for people who are listening to us after the fact, Mitch left and now he's back. I don't know what he did.
Awful cramp, man.
That was the shortest pee break ever.
Sorry.
Okay. Sorry. He just got up and left after we got talking about his driving in Canada. So, all right. Back to what I was going to say. We all every now and then come across keyboards where we are missing a key and we need to do something with it. Yes. This is a list of alt codes. I don't know if you've seen this, but you can type in. So say you want a heart. It's alt 3. So they're ASCII codes. They're all these ASCII codes from, 0 to 255. So if you want, capital H, you can hit alt 72, and that'll give you a capital H. So I don't know. I thought this was kind of a fun...
Wait, all the time? Like in a text document right now, I could do that? Is what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I can't do it because I'm on a Linux box. But yeah, on a Windows box, you should be able to type in...
Really?
Yeah, you should be able to type in alt and then a number or a sequence of numbers and get...
Well, if they can make those crazy pictures out of those characters, I can't...
It's ASCII art.
Yeah.
ASCII art.
Right. Yeah, so. Well, that's like dots and slashes and things like that in certain positions. But this is, say you need the Omega password, the Omega sign. That's the O, isn't it?
I don't know.
I can't. Okay, yeah, so maybe it's not the Omega one.
I wasn't going to do it because it sounded like a trick. Kind of like...
No.
Windows key L. It will type a alpha sign. Everybody try it now.
That locks you out of your computer. Don't do it.
Oh, I just did it. Stop my audacity. Oh, no.
No, you did not. Okay, good. But anyways, so if you guys are interested, I'll put it in the notes. So I just came across it. It's altcodes.net.
I'm trying to learn how to use the keys to use Nano. Jeez, learn all something else now. Nano right. And Linux.
So if you want a heart, press Alt and then type 3. If you want a half, like the 1/2, you hit Alt 171 and you get the half symbol.
This is all. That's very valuable. I need to try this. It's valuable if there is one of those symbols that you use all the time.
Exactly.
You don't have to like open up, new character sets or load new
fonts.
New fonts. Exactly. Thank you. You have a keyboard shortcut, bam, and you have that symbol that you use all the time for whatever reason.
Right. And it's kind of funny because if you go to that website, on the right-hand side, there's miscellaneous alt quotes. Zodiac signs, Latin cross, bullet, alt codes, degree. There's another one called a heart, and I thought I'd look this up for you. So alt 3 gives you the black heart, like on a deck of cards. Well, alt ampersand, no wait, alt and... pound 9825 semicolon gives you a white heart that's empty. So you can have a whole bunch of different hearts if you want to. I think that's what it told me. But anyways, I thought I'd share that out. I thought it was kind of a fun.
Numlock has to be on. Okay.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Numlock on. Hold down the Alt key and then type the number code.
Type Alt 13.
Okay, so numlock. That was a missing piece. That's okay. It makes sense. It makes sense. On the first page, it actually says check out how to use alt code characters to learn the use of alt codes.
Oh, okay.
There at the very beginning. So, yeah, NumLock's the missing piece. That now it makes a little bit more sense. Because it really sounded like an April Fool's thing to go in there for a minute.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, make sure the number lock is on. I apologize.
Yeah. You know, we could do a whole show on, like, you know, April Fools or, you know, computer tomfoolery. Through the years doing this, I've heard so many funny little pranks that people have done. And, you know, of course, the Windows L is pretty fantastic.
Oh, how?
Well, I use that all the time. When I would get up from my Windows box, I'd hit Windows L and I walk away.
Halloween is coming
up. No. For me personally, it's a useful tool. You know, for somebody else, they are a useful tool when they don't know what it does. I use Windows L all the time, but you know, somebody, well, how do you do this? I'm like, I think it's Windows L. And then they lock it. I said, well, what'd you do? You know, you broke it, and hilarity ensues.
Hilarity ensues.
There's a lot of really, really funny pranks. I mean, just reading them.
Oh, yeah.
Are great. I think that one of my favorites, you'll have to indulge me. I'm going to go forward with this little, it won't take me long, but I think one of my favorites is you get a hold of somebody's computer and you, you know, there in the settings for the desktop, you have a display, no icons. So the desktop is just blank except for the wallpaper. Then what you do is you take a screenshot of that and in Paint, or not even that, I think, you know what, I've got this completely wrong, and I'm sorry. I'm a good person. I haven't actually employed this in a long time. I'm sorry. What you do is you actually take a screenshot of all the icons on there, except maybe you leave an icon, you make an icon for like a shortcut to something inappropriate, I'll say, or use your own creativity. You take that screenshot, you save it, and then you use that screenshot as their wallpaper.
We do that at work all the time.
After having disabled all of the icons. Some such thing, you know, you can mix it up, but basically they have icons they can't click because it's actually just the wallpaper they're clicking on. Or all the icons are good, but they have one icon they can't move that's a shortcut to something inappropriate. And you can watch somebody just go into ape mode over this because...
I've had it done to me many times at work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've done all that. Switch left and right mouse pointer, you know, when the keys, when the mouse. We've done that before.
You know, there is, because that's the thing is that there are so many, like, little settings in Windows that you know, a very small percentage of people actually get something out of. And so nobody knows actually how to turn them on and off. And you could, yeah, I mean, yeah, switch the left and right mouse button. Classic.
I made a Visual Basic script saying you're infected. It'll bring up a DOS window, and I put it in the start menu on my wife's computer, so she goes on there, and it comes up with this, you are infected with, I make up some things, and she starts calling me over there, and I start, where did you go? What did you do? And one time, I put, you know, TeamViewer has a, I forgot what it's called, they have one, a certain version where you can have it on all the time,
Unintended.
And, yeah, and I hit it. She couldn't see it because Davey told me what to do. So I had that on here. And I would start doing stuff and, you know, move her mouse. She would call me and she's getting, things are popping up. And I said, it's working fine to me. It's working fine to me. I don't see anything wrong. Oh, it was fun. Really fun.
Oh, gosh. I love it. Well, anyway, yeah, we could fill several shows with all the funny things you could do. Anywho.
Well, that, yeah. Let's see. April 1st.
Martin's one of the good guys.
Well, April 1st, 2014 is a Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
We also switched to Apple phones. Oh, wait a minute. They already did that before.
I don't know. Well, I'm just saying that we could use that as our day to do stuff.
Cool.
On the show, like we could talk about that. You're just
that actually would be a good show. Goodness.
My goodness, my goodness.
There is a history of interesting April Fool's shows here at Podnuts.
Yes. Yeah. We did get a voicemail from Jeff Owens, Black Hammer. And I am pulling it up right now. Sorry. Sorry, guys. I'm pulling up the email right now. Because we can't really do the audio yet.
I can.
But I need to Well, will everybody live hear it, or will we just hear it?
Oh, that's right. You know what? You guys would hear it, but it wouldn't pick up on my recording. So.
Okay. So, let me just, I can pull up the voicemail here. Sorry. So, it is from Black Hammer, and he basically goes on, hey, this is Geeksters. I'm going to, Jeff Owens, if you're listening, because Google's great voice to text transition translation is not so good. I'm going to have to just kind of make my way the best I can with this, but we'll get the, everybody will get the point of it. So, hey, this is Geeksters, this is Black Hammer, just listening to the October 11th show when I mentioned we were concerned, we did not know whether or not Windows 8 would run other antiviruses like Avast, and it will. He does use it in his enterprise level, and he does have a Windows 8. I think he has got a Windows 8 machine that he runs it on. So it will run on that. He also wanted to let you know, Tim, that not to leave, because last week you had said that Fred was giving you a bad time and you were going to leave the show.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks.
And he did tell.
Yeah, don't worry, everybody. I've never left anywhere quietly.
Well, and you know, on a side note, when I got this voicemail, and he said, "Tim, don't leave," or he said, "Tim, I heard about your parting," and I was like, "What?" That was so. I'm voxing everybody. Like, is Tim leaving? Is he not telling us what's going on? So, it did honestly make me a little nervous because I thought, no. He did tell Fred to shut up about the Steelers, though, in here. We don't want to hear any more of the garbage, Fred, about the Steelers. He says, so keep it to yourself in the chat. and then he gives something about the U.S. Postal Service still trying to win another football game and ends it with yay Colts. So
the U.S. The U.S. Postal Service?
He's referring to the Seahawks.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. I gotcha. Very good.
Good team.
So sorry, Black Hammer, I didn't do justice to your voicemail, but did want to throw that in there, that if you are running Windows 8, Avast will run on that. And I just have this Windows 8 machine here and messing with it, so I'm not sure I'm going to put Avast on it. I know it has just Defender that comes with it right away.
Is that true? You're going to, since you got that Windows 8, you're going to give up all your Linux machines?
No. This machine will be out of my house in less than 24 hours. It's not actually, you know, putting the clam Windows shell thing classic, in it has classic. Made it usable.
Windows Classic.
Whatever it is.
Not clam.
Yes, that thing. Well, it looks like a clam.
It does. Yeah, the little, the icon.
Well, it looks so that's why I was.
Yeah, look, I mean, that makes it usable. If 8.1 actually makes it like you.
Oh, that's the other thing he did.
What's that?
That's the other thing Jeff mentioned didn't bring to the show. So all that button does is switch back between the Metro interface and the desktop. It doesn't actually add a start menu. It's a toggle.
I don't think it does.
It better not be.
That's all it does.
Yes, he said.
No, the Windows key does that now.
I know. There's other things to do that.
He said,
right?
Well, now you have a button to push.
So 8.1 is a graphical Windows button that I can click.
That does. Right. So if you have if you are missing a finger,
I hate.
Well, then you guys have to click. But
I hate these people.
He got it from TechNet.
That can't be true.
And he said he rolled it back.
I'm going to wait.
There might be some other fixes too, or other patches.
There may be
besides that though. But
that maybe Windows 8 will now start supporting HP LaserJet 4s.
Mm. We got them at work. What's left? The ones that aren't broken.
This Windows 8. If it would just be Windows 7 with the addition of the option of the Metro interface. Yeah, it is. It's a uniface. Right now, it's a uniface. That's what you're stuck with. If Windows 8 was Windows 7, which is underneath, and everything's in the UI was the same, but you had the option of the Metro interface at times. I would actually be excited about this product because I love Windows 7, and this would be Windows 7 Plus. It would give me the option of actually using, if I had a Windows phone or a Windows tablet or whatever, I could actually have my computer mimic that. Okay, I would actually be interested in that product, but that's the difference between loving and hating this Windows 8. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right.
Anyway, I think I just discovered that. I had to, like, blurt it out. But if this is nothing more than just, like, the Windows key that switches it back and forth.
Yeah, one on the desktop.
Then I wouldn't be surprised. That's what these people have done to me my whole life. They've just disappointed me.
It's like a family reunion.
It's like they don't even dangle the carrot anymore.
I think
they just beat you with it.
They beat you with the carrot.
See this carrot,
Martin? since you're near him, I think you need to give Bill a message. He can get something through.
Go do donuts in his yard for a while. Say, wake up, jerk.
Well, you know, and some people do like the Metro.
By the way, who is running Microsoft now?
Steve Ballmer.
He stepped down.
He's leaving. But he's leaving. Well, yeah, someday he'll leave.
You already announced he stepped down. But I wish nobody was in charge.
I wish it was just an anarchy of, like, departments. Because whatever came out of it couldn't be any different or worse. It could actually be better. Like, just a complete anarchy. Whatever exploded out the end of it, the people could just use it and figure it out. And it couldn't be any worse.
No.
Windows 8 is not bad.
I don't think so. What do you think?
Windows 8 was not bad.
I mean, if nobody was in charge and like the whole company just melted down and all they could do at this point was just maintain Windows 7, I'd be happy.
Well, if Windows 7 has as much success as XP did, it's going to be here for a while,
It's going to have to be because, I mean, a lot of the world is locked into using Windows. If XP goes away, we're just going to default to Windows 7 and we have to make it last forever, so, which is fine with me. I mean, I having XP forever wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but we had a lot of third-party tools that sprung up around it that were
XP got really good with the patches. And
I mean, SP3 and all that. I'm still using Ultimate Boot City for Windows a few times a week. It doesn't work over.
Yeah.
You know, all the tools don't necessarily work, but. It's ridiculous that the tool that old that hasn't been updated at all is still as useful as it is.
Oh yeah, it's rock solid.
You know, so having third party tools like that work specifically with Windows 7, I'd be happy with that. Next, 10
Michael
years.
Dell is going to take over Microsoft. I think they mentioned that on Twitch, just joking around. I heard that too, but nah.
Krusty the Clown could run Microsoft.
So they're talking about how the new update will also allow you to change the size of the tiles.
So. Really?
Yes.
After you get rid of them.
Eight, that's right. I can hold down Control and scroll my mouse and change the size of the icons on Windows 7.
That's right.
He says that Windows 8 is good if you have a touchscreen. So I want to also mention this, that I have a touchscreen coming with Windows 8 on it. It's a tablet. And we purposely bought Windows 8 because it is a tablet. And I think that will be useful, but I'm pretty sure we're going to put Classic Shell on that.
You bought it for yourself?
No, it's for a client. But it's a tablet. Right. So it's a vet. And they walk around with the tablet and they'll be doing their
application. It certainly makes sense on a tablet to have,
Right.
I would imagine it's probably true. Windows 8 is probably
great,
perfectly usable if you have a touchscreen. But I do not waver from from my opinion that a touchscreen at a desk on a computer on a PC is an evolutionary step backward from using a mouse. I'm not sitting at my desk using a touchscreen on a 22-inch screen. That's insane.
I don't disagree. When I go to get my car serviced, they have a couple PCs in here. They're PCs. They're not tablets, and they're touchscreen now, and it's really awkward. You know, it is awkward.
I could kind of see that. I mean, that's kind of like the touchscreens at the ATMs or the touchscreens when I order my food at the Sheets or whatever it is. But just making Word document files, putting the show together, whatever. I'm not using a touchscreen. That's ridiculous.
Now, these machines
here. This is what the show would look like using a touchscreen on Windows 8.
If they had a camera, camera view,
You mean like, and now we're going to go to Fred.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go to Mitch.
You just see me over here, I'm just doing this.
We're all Windows 8 now.
I'm looking on CSI and their arms are flailing around as they're fixing. That's crazy. That if the future looks like that, I want to die now.
basic chat.
That's how I. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm sorry.
Opinions can be sent to hate mail at Geekster.
They're going to agree.
No, I mean, like I said, I have a headache.
Pie.
Yeah. I have a headache.
Pie.
I got a headache from pie. P.I. The movie.
Raspberry Pi?
So far, highly recommended. But it's intense.
Yeah. So,
anyway, yeah, Windows 8 up. What else you got, Martin? I'm tired of talking about crap I don't care about.
All right. That's it, actually, for me.
Really?
That's what you're I want to bring those things. Oh, my. I'm back. But no, I want to bring those things to the talk about security and stuff. It's still, you know, October is still security month, and I thought I'd bring at least, you know, an article or two regarding security about what we can do to make ourselves just a little bit more secure.
Those were outstanding topics. I kind of meant like the last minute and a half about Windows 8 and touchscreens.
Oh.
Not, I didn't mean that the whole show was of stuff that you brought was crap. And I was tired of it. I didn't mean that at all. I thought it was a pretty outstanding topic.
I'm going to go now.
I actually have a couple things that I wanted to mention. And maybe the one I should just leave. Now that I'm all fired up, I should probably leave the one alone. But in my area, at least, my daughter picked up the remote control and turned on the TV. And we had no channels. And so, okay. So my first thought is, of course, honey, what'd you do to it? Because, of course, it's going to be her fault. She's a kid. And her mom just started in on her, and in the end, she had nothing to do with it. But my television was saying that the channel was unavailable and that the signal was encrypted.
Comcast.
Yeah. So Comcast has encrypted now even the basic channels. So paying for basic cable and you plugging the cable directly in the back of the television, you can no longer tune basic channels. You actually have to have a converter box to watch your local channels.
They did that 2 years ago up here, Tim. They did that years ago.
A couple years ago, they encrypted all the channels except basic, but now they've encrypted even the basic channels. So all we have is, now, Comcast is my ISP. It just so happens it was cheaper if I got local or the basic cable with it, some kind of a stupid pack. Like, I don't care. Just give it to me. Well, just give me what I want. If it's cheaper, that's fine. So we do have the basic cable, and
see, they supply two digital converters for us for free.
Right. I think I have two or three of those, and
doesn't do HD. It's just analog.
Well, see, that's the thing was that I you know, plugged directly back into the television that television was tuning it as HD, even the basic channels. And so I'm assuming that using these little converters that goes away. And so, you know, I've kind of felt the same way about Comcast. I have Microsoft. I guess everybody's at the point where it's like, you don't really have an opinion until they really jack you up. And then you hate them forever. And I think, so I finally got to that point with Comcast is that, you know, you didn't need, this is crazy. You know, why did you do this? And so, I mean, I don't know. It's not that this is a huge life-ending thing or anything. I just unplugged their cable and I just hooked up the aerial, which I should have had in the first place. And then I tuned all my local channels. You know, problem solved. But it just seemed like such a silly thing.
You have
and if I was paying it, HD if I was paying TV? Attention, I'm sure there was plenty of warning in all this. But I just haven't. It just all of a sudden happened one day. I'm like,
are your TVs HD, Tim?
Yeah.
Oh, they are. So you're picking up HD off the air.
Oh yeah.
See, I'm too far. I can't get any. I can't get any on the air. I'm just too far away.
Yeah, no. I've used the ever since they went to the digital. I used the aerials to tune the, what is it? ATSC? Is that the digital signal over the air? And so, yeah, I was always tuning them with my media center boxes, and it was always adequate. And so, a couple months ago, the media center box came. Actually, at the beginning of summer, the media center box came out because I didn't want the kids spending the summer in front of the television, which didn't work. They just ended up in front of the television watching stupid crap they weren't happy with, and they complained the whole summer. But you know, I just hooked the cable directly up to the set, and we had just the basic channels, and that was adequate. And so, but then that just kind of went away last couple of days. So. Anyway, I was not very happy about that. But it's, I just want to throw it out there. It's not something that, like I said, easily resolved. So the other thing, I did have a machine come in, and I found a nice, tidy cleanup solution to it. It could have been a pretty big deal, and this works. So I kind of wanted to just real quickly outline the process. So Windows 7, 64-bit laptop. It was affected with Antivirus Security Pro. Once again, just that's one of those ones that we've all seen, or it's kind of like every virus just has like a collection of names. Pick three words, put it together. That's the name of your antivirus, your virus. So this was Antivirus
it's like one of those,
Security Pro.
But like, take your middle name, take your mother's maiden name,
right,
and then put your dog's first name.
Right, to get your stripper name.
Yeah.
Right. Well, no, or the new antivirus name. Either
name.
Way.
Oh, that's right. So this thing, what I did, it would boot in normal mode, or if you boot in normal mode, log in to desktop, it was locked down. You couldn't do anything. So boot it into safe mode. As it was trying to load the desktop, it would reboot.
Right.
And
right.
So this thing had actually just broken Windows in addition to infecting it. And of course, the whole thing is they just want you to send money. Boot into. Go ahead.
No, did you send money?
No, I collect money. Man. That's the end I'm on.
Kaspersky.
I was hoping you'd send me some. Go ahead.
I don't have any money to send you. You send me money.
Well, no, I wanted $300 in a wire transfer.
You had a mic sent. Oh, you had a mic sent to you.
Please, never mind.
This was different. This wasn't the FBI. The FBI.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry.
So the. So anyway, I booted into the Windows, the whole like the recovery area, the repair area, repairing computer. And I wanted to just run a system restore. Everything looked good. I got two systems, ran the system, initiated the process system restore. It showed me restore points, chose the one I wanted. It scanned for affected programs. Okay, I'm satisfied, but I couldn't click next. I was given the message that system protection was not enabled on this drive, and that I had to enable system protection on this drive. So, yeah, this is my first rodeo. This was, what did I just say? This is not my first rodeo. That when I see something like that, that doesn't tell me, okay, if I do that, I can then go ahead. That tells me nothing. This is broken. This isn't going to work. I'm not going to waste any time going down that road. I used the audit boot CD for Windows, because there's a great tool in there that I love. It's the registry restore wizard. What it does is it lets you run that system restore, or it lets you choose different restore points. It does it, but it's like running system restore as a tool from a live disk, as opposed to actually having to rely on some component of Windows. And so you can try restore point. If it doesn't work, it's very easy. It doesn't make any major, you don't lose it. You can actually like boot back into all boot CD for Windows. You can put it back to the broken condition. It doesn't actually make anything. It can't be undone, any changes. However, running that, and I'm assuming it's just the difference of it being Windows 7 64, but it actually couldn't find any of the restore points. So what I ended up doing, and this worked just a charm, and any live disk that would allow you to view the file system would work. In the folder that has the all of the registry files and whatnot, that's going to be your root drive, and it's in the Windows folder, System32, config. And in there are all of your registry type files. But in that folder as well is a folder called RegBack. And what that does, you have five files, specifically that for five file names you're looking for that are, you know, responsible for all of the registry. And correct me if I'm saying this wrong, because the whole registry thing is still pretty mystical to me, but I know that if the files I'm looking for are default, SAM, security, software, and system. And so if in the RegBack folder, you will find those same files, but they're 4 or 5, maybe 7 days old. And so taking those files, default SAN security software system, in the config folder, which is what Windows is trying to use now. I just back them up somewhere else, and then I copy those same files from the regback folder into config, and you know, requiring Windows to use those. So at least I know that I can force it kind of into going back that far. Okay, very easy. It almost seems too easy. Yeah, it almost seems too easy. But did that, and you know, it booted right up to the in normal mode perfectly. I had none of this kind of nonsense. Now, I did have, it was kind of like running System Restore, where the antivirus pro, whatever it was, it wasn't actually running or whatnot, but still had all the shortcuts and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it still existed almost as like a ghost, like it does when you run a System Restore, but it wasn't actually running and affected it. So from there, I was then able to run System Restore, choose a good restore point. I did that. Everything was still good. And then I could then begin.
Clean up.
Yes. I began running the scans, so the malware bytes. And to ensure that there is no existing infection, that there are any traces left or removed. Once I was satisfied with that, I did delete all restore points, turned off the system restore, and rebooted, set a good restore point. And then from there, I love that point right there, because you know, it's kind of like you can almost see the finish line. You're running downhill, baby. So you're installing Windows updates, you know, whatever programs were quote unquote affected, you begin reinstalling those and making sure that you have a good, the first thing you do is just make sure you have a good resident AV program and that it's working, scanning properly. So,
hey, Tim, real fast, in that Regback folder, what did you actually do with those files? I have it
okay,
up
on so,
my I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Regback, it has
software, system, SAN, default. Security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Default systems, default security, SAM. And there's also log files.
Yes.
And I think I actually copied those too. So I don't know. I'd have to check. I don't remember if I copied just those files or the log files as well.
You put them in.
But yeah, basically those are backups of those same files from the config folder. So if you go up one step in the tree, mm-hmm. you're in the config folder.
Right.
And all of those files in the config folder, which is what Windows is using now. Those I just backed them up to somewhere way different else on the C drive, and then I copied the files in the Regback.
Yeah,
they were about five days old. I copied them into the config folder.
From Regback. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, so that Windows is now using a completely different. Registry set, and it really was. It was like just a little time machine, and it worked beautifully, and it was so easy. So I don't know. That's definitely another thing I will consider in the future, put it in my tool belt. That
can I suggest something?
Yeah, buddy.
Because I had a similar thing like that before too, but I used this Kaspersky Live CD, and then it's got a separate thing in here where you don't have to go ahead and update it. It's got the Windows Unlocker utility in there. You just run that, and then it usually gets the Rogue. And because I had very similar with doing the same thing, and it worked really fast.
Yeah. Now, if and that's right. That's a step that I fortunately did not need. That this I was able to go back far enough that the infection was, I'm not going to say it's eliminated, but it was neutralized, then work around. You know, I didn't have to deal with it as I was trying to clean it out. The thing is that I believe it's one thing to remove the virus. It's another thing that if the virus has actually damaged parts of Windows, and so if you can remove it and then repair Windows, if it's if the damage isn't great, I've done that many times. Sometimes you have to repair Windows enough to get to where you can then remove the infection. This was a situation where Windows was so broken by the infection, possibly, that I may have been looking at a reinstall anyway. So, right. It was a very small step that I was able to take to actually, to get it going. So no, you're absolutely right. Sometimes you do manage to fix Windows enough, you can then work on it. But I'm a huge fan of Kaspersky Rescue Disks.
Right.
But if that was my first step and I removed the infection, I still would have a broken copy of Windows.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's I hate these guys. I wish I could do just nothing but good stuff, fun stuff for a living. You know, build, not have to constantly fix things that have been wrecked.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. Anyway, no.
They do make they make things tough, and it's all just malicious, and it's all just a big pain.
If you got Hitman Pro. If you had that on, what's that one, Hitman Pro, what's the one with the USB, Martin, I forgot what it's called.
Yeah, it's called the Hitman Pro Kickstarter.
That may work too.
But yeah, I don't know if you've used Hitman Pro, Tim, but.
Oh yeah, absolutely, for years.
That's another good one too.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Good show.
Yeah, it sounds like a good way to kill it. I mean, it seems like you went through a whole lot of work.
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, actually, well, that was my point, it was actually very, very, I mean, some of these things are huge.
Did you research this to find this method, Tim?
Yeah, that's just what I did.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you go to the registry, though, that's always sketchy.
Well, it is. But when you're at the point where Windows is broke, you're probably looking at a reinstall.
Nothing to lose.
You have nothing to lose. And all I did was copy a few files. And what's the worst case scenario? I boot up the live disk and copy the original ones back. And I still have a broken, but at least, recognizable system. The explanation was probably long, but actually, you could probably do it about as quickly as it took me to explain it. You boot up a live disk, you switch it, you back up, a handful of files, you copy in the old ones, boom,
pretty quick.
It was fantastic how quickly, how easily it worked, and how effective it was. So,
That's true. That sounds really good. Sounds good. Well, good job, Tim. I mean,
I'm going to put it in my memory bank. So,
yeah.
Well,
yeah. Anytime.
Hopefully, between the three of us and our listeners, somebody will remember it for the next time I need it.
I'll forget in 5 minutes. But anyway, I'll try.
A lot of us. We're all in this together.
We're all going down together. All right. Well, guys, it sounds like that's a great show. I think we brought a lot today, and looking forward to next week. We'll see what comes up next week. All right, guys. Well, have a great week, and we will talk to you next time. Bye, guys.